Hello, Chicago, and welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast, your audio source for what's going on in the Chicago theater scene. This is the episode for September 10th, 2007, and on this episode, we have an interview with the famous Chicago director Mark Robin. That's right, he will be talking about his latest show, The Producers, now playing at the Marriott Theater in Lincolnshire. Mark Robin has won 14 Jeff Awards, and he's a great interview to have this week. Also, we have the Equity Jeff Award nominations for Chicago's Theater News, so get ready, Chicago. Let's talk theater.
You're listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. Our guest this week is the famed director who is a no stranger to Chicago theater. He is Mark Robin, who has 14 Jeff Awards, and his latest show at the Marriott Theater is The Producers. Hello, Mark.
Good morning.
Tell us what we can expect from your production of The Producers at Marriott Theater.
Well, hopefully people that will see this production will come away incredibly entertained and very happy that they saw it. The idea, what we're trying to do is just make this something that everybody will come and see and want to just smile and laugh and have a good time and sort of put their normal day out of their mind and escape to the theater.
Well, tell us how you approach a major musical with big dance numbers that is kind of the last of the old throwback musicals in terms of style. How do you do it on the Marriott stage, on that in the round, you know, intimate stage?
Well, I've always been a big fan of the in the round because in the round, like for all the years that I was at Drury Lane and Evergreen Park, I realized that in the round you can basically stage it how you would in life. Like as we're having a conversation right now, proscenium, we would have to sort of turn our chairs so that we're facing the audience. Whereas in the round, I can have a conversation one-on-one and not worry about whether I'm cycling the back lines forward with choreography. Whereas in the round, you can pretty much do what you want. As long as you sort of adopt the rule of, well, you're always facing somebody, and yes, you're always showing somebody your back, but it's actually more freeing for me in the round. So for these big musicals like Cats or Beauty and the Beast or the things that have huge dances, I actually prefer in the round.
That's interesting. Yeah.
And with The Producers specifically, it's so big. I mean, there's so much to it. There's so many scenes and there's so much choreography that for me, I always sort of take it one scene at a time instead of like looking at the whole thing and going, oh my God, it's so big.
Have you made any major cuts or is it pretty much the same production?
It's, you know, what I would say is it is definitely not what people have seen before.
Great.
We're not doing, just by virtue of the fact that we have Robbie Lehman and Guy Atkins, I mean, they are so unique and they have their own personalities and you won't think, oh, he's doing a Nathan Lane ripoff or he's doing a Matthew Broderick ripoff. And I'm certainly not doing a Susan Stroman ripoff. Everybody that's been involved in the production from sets, costumes, everything, we're all bringing our own take to this material.
That is so refreshing to hear. Not to take anything wrong with the show. It was great.
No, it's a great show.
But you're reinterpreting it and with your two major stars. Just
amazing.
For people who, the few people in the world who have not seen The Producers, give me a little idea of what it's about.
Well, like you said, it is that sort of big classic musical, and Mel Brooks, who has a very irreverent style of humor, has sort of taken his, you know, put his blend of his satirism on the world of the theater. And basically it's the story of these two, you know, this one down and out producer who realizes that financially there is a loophole that you can make more money with a flop than a hit if you overcapitalize it and you're sure it's going to fail. So that's the whole premise, is trying to find the worst play you can produce with the worst cast, blah, blah, blah. And then they go about doing it. And of course, you know, I don't want to give anything away for the people that haven't seen it, but it doesn't always go the way they plan. And it's that big classic. It's got huge dances. And of course, I love to dance. So we're really taking the dance envelope and bumping it up a notch.
Oh, great.
Like the opening number, I think originally was sort of a stylistic interpretation of almost like a horror with Max Bialystock. And we've turned it into a sort of big big production number, and so it's got a lot of dance, a lot of singing.
Well, with a Mark Robbins show, there's always a lot of, and if not, whatever dance there is, you always get the best out of it.
And you're my agent.
No, it's true, and 14 Jeff Award speaks to that.
They've been very good to me.
And because in the film, the new film version,
right?
They took out the opening number.
They did, actually. Yeah. They eliminated a lot of stuff in the film.
Yes.
They really tried to streamline it down to Max and Leo. And when you're doing a motion picture, first of all, unless you have a really creative way to pull off a musical number, it's hard to do. I mean, if you see like the musical of Chicago, because it's so... the numbers themselves are so inherent in telling the story. That's one thing. But some of the stuff that you try to transfer from the stage to the screen isn't always necessary in the storytelling. It's there for entertainment purposes for a Broadway show. General moviegoing audiences might not want to see that on the screen.
Oh,
so I think that's why they excised it. We're not cutting anything.
Great. So, and you've enhanced the opening number to really grab you.
Right. And, you know, the thing that most people, you know, have asked so far about, you know, are you doing Susan Stroman stuff? And the answer is no, we're not. However, much like Hello Dolly, if you're going to do Hello Dolly, she's going to come down a staircase in a red dress. So, yes, we are doing the little old ladies, and they will have walkers. Now,
yeah, I mean, you have to. That's a trademark, right?
Just because they have walkers
doesn't
mean we're doing that choreography with the walkers.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, we're not. But, yes, they have walkers. That's about as far as we're going, I think. Yeah, I think that's about as close.
So is this the first regional production of the show?
First regional production is the first time, obviously, I've ever done it. I saw the movie once, and I saw the stage play once. And part of it was when I got the job, I didn't want to study anything because for me, I don't want to know what it was, or I will sort of not allow myself to get away from that. It was like Cats. I'd never seen Cats when I did Cats.
Is that that's
ever.
Right. And, you know, everyone is to this day is claiming that that's the best production.
Oh, see, they're being sweet.
No, it's one of those pieces, as I think the producers and many of the big shows, they work better on the smaller stages. And they work better when they're reinvented, you might say, or reinterpreted.
Well, one of the wonderful things about this particular theater is that they will allow you to do a really big show in a big scale way, but encourage you to bring your own take to it. There's many theaters across the country that will do the producers, but will hire somebody who's been a Susan Stroman assistant to recreate it because they want to take the Broadway quote unquote show and bring it to their theater. What I love about the Marriott is that they'll take the Broadway title, but allow you to make it our own. You know, our Beauty and the Beast wasn't anything like the Broadway.
No, it sure
production.
Wasn't. It was, you know, much better again. It was.
My agent again. And so we're encouraged. So even with this, you know, Terry was very clear. He said, listen, we have the rights. We want you to do it, and we want you to do it. So I didn't do any research as far as what did they do, how did they do it, because the play is so strong. The script is so good.
Yeah.
It's not like you look at it and go, gosh, I have no idea what this is supposed to be. So it worked out good.
And the humor is blast. And the humor is fabulous.
We laugh every day. I mean, truly, we're getting paid for this, and we feel like...
So tell us about your two leads. I happen to know them, but for some of our listeners, two of the classic...
Well, I've been huge fans of them for years. Robbie Lehman, I met about years ago, a long time ago, when he was doing a production of The Normal Heart, a play. And I thought, oh, my God, who is this actor? He's brilliant. Had no idea he sang or danced or anything. And then right after that, he did the first production of Hot Mikado here at the Marriott.
Yes, he did. I remember that.
Oh, my God, this man is a Broadway star. And he is, in fact, a Broadway star.
Yeah, he took that show to Broadway. Yeah, yes.
Well, he did Forum. He took Forum and played Hysterium on Broadway. And Guy Atkins, who I worked with in the ensemble years ago here at the Marriott. I was in 42nd Street with him. Then I choreographed him in Peter Pan at Oak Park. That's been my only experiences with them.
And he's a major classical actor.
Huge, yeah. huge. And, you know, from Shakespeare to, you know, just toured in Sweet Charity with Molly Ringwald.
That's right.
And they are the classiest, nicest men who came to the first rehearsal off book and basically looked at me and said, okay, now what? And every day is nothing but fun and games. They've been nothing but collaborative and joyous. They love each other. It's been sort of, you know, every now and then you get to do a show, you get to do an experience where you don't come to work, you come to play and get paid for it. And this has been one of those. Every day, we've just, I mean, we laugh all day. all day. Ask Peter; he'll tell you.
Well, I'm sure that's true. And the word that I hear from all the actors in town is they love being in your shows because you are so organized.
Thank you.
Precise is what one of the ladies that let me in, and I looked at the clock, and we were supposed to meet at a certain time. And guess what, folks? As soon as the hand hit that number, Mark walks in the door. Your timing is very good.
Well, you know what? My mother, I grew up. My mother was a bookkeeper, so I grew up on numbers. I grew up on math, and I worked for my mother, and I did all the accounting. So I've always sort of had this, you know, all the numbers have to line up. Everything has to total. Everything has to be, you know, calculated to the penny. So I've always sort of lived my life that way, from the standpoint of if something's going to be done, then it's going to be done this way. I, having grown up as a performer, one of the things that always used to drive me crazy was when I'd show up to a first rehearsal and the people I was rehearsing for hadn't thought of it in advance. They sort of used us as their, well, let's see, what will we do today? Well, what do you think we should do today?
Oh, my God.
And what happens is it creates an environment where you're sort of frustrated and you're not giving your all because everybody's trying to say, well, we should do this or that. So I always sort of vowed that if I was ever in a position where I could, quote, unquote, make the rules, unquote, I would make sure that I took care of the people that I worked for first.
So you don't see a contradiction between being extremely organized and being creative? Because some people say inherently there's a problem with that, but...
No, I don't. Actually, I love... Well, we've had this conversation. I love what I do so much. And I think anybody that takes care of what it is that they love, it will always be there for them to continue loving it. And what I do isn't just me. It's everybody. It's you. It's even this interview. Or it's Nancy in the costume shop or the cast or the artistic process before the show. I think if you violate any part of that process and if you dishonor that, and you can dishonor something very simply by not being on time or not being ready for them when they walk in the room. And I've sort of vowed never to do that. And so far, knock on wood, things have gone pretty well.
Well, and that style certainly works here at Marriott, because I remember when I interviewed Terry James, which I did a few weeks back, he was telling me about the process that a show like The Producers, as major a show as this is, you have what, 2 weeks, 14, 15 days? To
2 weeks.
2 weeks,
right.
From beginning to
end. And I think in New York, they'll have like, you know, most shows will have like 8 weeks. But that's another reason, just inherently, if I don't show up the first day of school, quote unquote, with my charts and with my choreography already thought out, by the time I figure it out on my feet with everybody, we'll be going into tech and we won't have a show. And it's a challenge. I love challenges. You know, the bigger the show, actually, the more prepared I am. A show like I Do, I think I had it blocked, but I certainly didn't even think about the choreography because it was two people and I had 2 weeks with two people. You know, a show like this, every number I had blocked, charted, choreographed before I walked in the door. Because if I didn't, I wouldn't be able to do my job.
You know, and the 40,000 people who are subscribers to Marriott, and the rest of us who drive up from the city to see the shows, they're going to be amazed when they hear this. You have only 14 days, because these productions are so flawless. I mean, the values are so strong, and how do you even keep them in shape? Because people are running in and out because, you know, you're off on one side and then, you know, a minute later you got to be back, you know, on the other side.
Well, they don't need gym memberships at the Marriott because the aisles themselves is good exercise just to get out.
I mean, dead run. People notice it, yeah.
But you know what? We also, you can only work as fast as the people that you work with allow you. The casts that I'm always honored to work with here are always the people that know what the process is. They get it. They do their homework. They work quickly. You know, you don't teach them something and then they go off and, you know, have a conversation about the weather. They go off and make sure they know it. Then they'll have a conversation about the weather so that when we get back to it, I can keep moving forward. So everybody's on the same page.
So that's like the consummate professional standard.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's one of the reasons why that I know that Terry James and yourself and most of the directors like to hire people who they know who have worked here, not only because of the physical realities of your stage, but they're known quantities.
Sure. Well, you know what? There's also, I mean, we have some people that have not worked at this theater before in this cast as well.
Good.
But usually they're surrounded by enough people that have, so that you can say to somebody, hey, you know what, this is going to be blah, 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 but why don't you check with Tammy Mater, and she'll be able to give you even a bigger clue on the track from the dressing room to the green room down to the stage and where you need to make that costume change in the back of the house during, you know, blah, 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 so that they're always surrounded by people that know what's going on.
Okay.
Cats was actually challenging because I think there was like a third of the company that had never worked here. And
That's right. I remember you telling me that.
It was very interesting to sort of watch them go through the first week of previews going, oh my goodness, you explained all this, but we had no idea that truly when you said in the round, you meant in the round.
We're here at the rehearsal space, and I took a look at the space. That's the same size as the stage.
Correct. But what we don't have in there is the aisles.
Right.
So, for example, there's the Walker number, perfect example. Their first entrance is from the top of the aisles so that the audience will see these, you know, 16 people coming from the tops down the aisles, which they won't even be able to assimilate until we get over into the rehearsal space. Also, I don't know if you noticed all the little cut out and little taped things on
yes,
the stage.
Yes, I did.
There.
Yes.
That's all hydraulics, which we won't, again, be able to even begin to work with till we're in tech.
And you only get, what, 2 days in tech or something?
A day and a half?
Wow, that is amazing. Between that and your background at Drury Lane Evergreen Park, those were some great shows and some great times.
You know what? I just talked to Johnny for the first time in like 2 years just to see how he's
still
doing.
Around, huh?
He's in Florida.
Oh, okay.
He's in Florida. He's doing good. Just because we got really nostalgic one day, Kurt and I, and I thought, you know, if it wasn't for Johnny, if it wasn't for the opportunity that he gave me to sort of cut my, you know, wings at Evergreen Park, I wouldn't be having this interview with you right now. And I feel that he's hugely responsible for giving me the opportunity in the first sort of break in Chicago to work, and I'm sad. I went through a period of mourning when that theater closed.
We all did.
13 years of my life was invested in that theater, and I'd still be working there now if it was still open. But those were great times and great shows and huge, huge learning curves for me.
Yeah, well, one of the shows that I loved there was when you did Singing in the Rain.
It was a blast,
wasn't it?
It was a blast. The tech wasn't fun, but the show was good.
And then you remounted it at Green Street Theater in the city, and it had a pretty good run there. Okay, now tell us some of the people. We've got Russ Lehman and Guy Adkins are in the two leads.
Right. And Angela Feeney, who will actually be walking through the door in a moment.
Okay.
Is playing Ula, Michael Lindner, Bernie Vaughn, George Keating, Kathy Lord.
I mean, these are all the top A-list people.
But I mean, even my ensemble, you know, I mean, I look at someone like Tammy Mader, who I have huge, huge, huge respect for, because Tammy is not only an amazing actress, singer, dancer, she's also, I think, one of the best choreographers in town.
Yes, she is.
She's basically doing ensemble for me. And I've known Tammy for her whole career in this city, and I'm thrilled that people like her and Erica Mack and Matt Raftery, you know, who have agreed to just be a part of this production in a capacity where the audiences don't even realize that these are all people that are truly stars in their own right.
Yes, they are.
They carry a show all by themselves.
And I know you're directing all over the country, but isn't it true, and out-of-town people tell me that that's the Chicago mentality.
It is.
It's a blue-collar working man. One show you're the star, the next show you're in the ensemble.
Right.
And that just does not happen in like New York or
LA. Part of it is that, you know, in Chicago, there's a limited amount of possibilities to work. So if you love what you do and you want to do that thing that you love, then sometimes you don't get to do it the way you might want to. Even though you might think I'm a star, well, you might not have a starring role available to you in that show. Which is why people like Matt Raftery or Tammy Mader, who truly are stars, in my mind,
definitely
carry anything, can do an ensemble track, but then, you know, 3 months ago have just done major leads in Grease. You know, I mean, Tammy's Rizzo is unparalleled.
Oh, yes.
And it's I love that about Chicago. It's why somebody said once to me about how they didn't think it was fair that somebody called me Chicago's own Mark Robin, because I don't live here anymore. And I moved 3 years ago, and I said to that person, I lived here for 23 years. Everything I know about the theater, everything I know about what I do, I learned in this city with the people from this city. And I continue to do the bulk of my work even after I've moved in this city. I am absolutely a Chicago person.
And I'm one who uses that tag.
And I repeat that when I'm not here. People are like, oh, you're from Pennsylvania. I was like, I live in Pennsylvania. I'm from Chicago. I am a product of this city. And we'll defend that forever.
Okay. And tell us how you got your start. I know a husband and wife team who are going to be opening in Hello Dolly coming up pretty soon.
Paul and John.
Paul and John, yeah.
I sort of did. I did this sort of normal channels. I started as a performer. I've been in theater my whole life. I started when I was six. Was a performer, dancer, then became a dance captain, worked with the choreographer, then became a choreographer, assistant director, artistic director, producer, writer. I mean, it's all sort of been this logical progression of, well, what's the next thing to do in this industry? What's the next thing? For me, I guess the next thing that I haven't done, you know, would be to be an actual producer, to actually run my own theater outside of artistic directing. And that's something I would love to do, but not for a long time. I would very much like to continue doing what I'm doing right now until I can't do it anymore.
Well, that's terrific. And I remember in another interview, you're telling me, you got to tell me the Bob Fosse story. That when you were in a show that...
About my name?
No, about when Fosse took you aside and you thought he was going to compliment you and he went and broke down.
You're talking about Bojangles?
Yes, Bojangles, yeah.
This was Bob Fosse dancing, and when I did the number Bojangles, I had sung it, and then he just looked at me and he just came over and put his hand on my shoulder and sort of patted me on the back, and I thought he was going to say something nice, and he said, "Not so much. This is how you want to do it. And do it again." So I started to speak, and every word out of my mouth he questioned. I would say, "I knew a man." He'd go, "Who?" "Bojangles, what'd he do?" "And he danced for you." "What'd he wear?" "And worn out shoes." "What'd he look like?" Like, I was totally a river, sweating. And it took 10 minutes, and I never forgot it. Every night I was on stage, every minute I sang that song, he was in front of me. And I heard every one of those questions. And as a result, I interpreted that song the way he wanted me to, every single time.
So he was as tough as people.
Yeah. I thought you were going to... Do you know the name story?
No, tell me that.
Because that's how I got my name.
Okay.
That's the thing I thought you wanted.
All right.
He called everybody by their surname. So he would say Mr. Williams, and my given name is Rabinowitz. So he'd say Mr. Rabinowitz or Mr. Loop or Mr. Ingram or Mr. Cordy, because we were all part of the thing. And not one day, he could never say my name. He always stumbled over my name. And I'd always thought about changing it for equity anyway, because people have always had a hard time saying Rabinowitz. And one day, just casually, he said, "You know, you got to change that." And I came in the next day and I said, "Mr. Fosse, you can call me Mr. Robin." And I had changed it that morning with equity, and I've been Mark Robin ever since.
That's true. Oh, that story I didn't know.
That's it.
But it is a little easier to remember, isn't
it? Well, it's just easier to pronounce.
So he was one of your major influences.
Yeah, he was huge. Huge, huge, huge. And at a time that I didn't even realize it, I was 24, 25 years old. We had a six-week process putting that show together. It was sort of like a choreographer's seminar to see how a dance is really put together and the dynamics of the power of a pinky in choreography and the levels. And it was truly like a seminar in watching choreography. And I have found that for like the first 3 or 4 years that I actually choreographed, I found myself doing a lot of the things that we did in dancing, not those actual combinations, but applying those same kind of principles until I sort of hit on my own niche as far as, oh, I like this. This feels good for me. But yeah, it was huge. It was a great experience. I toured the country with it and met a lot of people and also sort of realized, yeah, this is definitely my ticket. Dance is what I want. Because I was sort of an actor, singer, dancer person.
So another story I got to ask you about is that I had heard a rumor the last show you did here, you actually performed because somebody was injured in some of the previews.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
For All Night Strut, which was the show we did at the holidays, which was this huge, huge, huge dance extravaganza. Did you see Strut?
Oh, sure.
Second act during the rhythm section, there was a solo tapper, which was Buddy,
yes,
my assistant.
Yes.
Well, on our opening preview, he got really sick. And it was our first preview. And at that point, the understudies, you know, that show was so big, people were just trying to keep up with their own tracks. And instead of trading everybody else around, I said, I can do it. And everybody was like, "You can?" I was like, "I don't know if I can, but I can certainly try." And I did. I did the final dress, and I did that opening, and I had a blast.
I was going to say, that must have been fun.
I had a blast. It was a blast. And it was the first time I really danced, for like 6 years since I'd gotten hurt during the Scarecrow. You know, performance. I've danced since then in rehearsals, but not performance in front of an audience.
Well, how did it feel physically?
Fantastic.
Yeah?
Yeah, it felt great.
Well, you keep yourself in good shape.
Yeah, right? I'm doing okay.
All right. Any plans on coming back to the stage as a performer?
I will tell you that I definitely got bit by the bug.
Good.
But Peninsula Players was so sweet, they offered me the MC and cabaret last summer.
Oh, you'd have been perfect for that.
I want to do it so bad, I can't tell you. But I couldn't do it, and I was heartsick about it, especially because Linda Fortunato, who is also a friend of mine, who is also a fantastic choreographer.
Yes, she is.
Was choreographing that production in Touchment, was directing it, and I really wanted to do it, but my schedule wouldn't let me.
But I have another one.
Like to be on stage someday.
I have another one you'd be perfect for, George M.
I would be happy to do it.
You would be great playing George M. Cohen.
It would be fun. Yes, someday before my feet fail me, I'd love to be on stage again.
Okay, so let's get back to the producers.
Sure.
Now it opens at Marriott on September 12th.
Right.
For what I think about 10-11 week run.
No, I think it's a 10-week run.
10-week run, and this is the regional premiere.
It is.
Is Mel Brooks going to come and see it?
Oh gosh, I don't know. I won't even think about it. Really, I won't. I think the thing that I would want to make sure everybody knows is that if they've seen it, if they've seen the movie, and if they've seen the Broadway show, that doesn't mean they've seen this show.
Okay.
It doesn't mean they've seen this production.
Well, trust me, folks, with what you did with Beauty and the Beast and shows like Cats and even West Side Story that you did a couple of years ago, that's one of my all-time favorite shows. Mm. And what you did with that show and
Thank you.
Dancing was just... And I had somebody with me who that was their all-time favorite show.
Wow.
And they were blown away. And it was the first time they were up at Marriott. It's a lady who's a kind of a Broadway snob. If it's not Broadway or a tour, they don't go. And I needed a ride up here to Marriott. And I said, you got to come. Trust me, it's good. If not, you know, I'll buy dinner.
Right.
And she bought dinner. And she's come to every Marriott show since.
That's excellent.
Yeah.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And
it was a great company.
Yeah. So the producers, what's the particular point of view that you took on this? I mean,
honestly, really honestly, I read the script and laughed out loud and thought, if we can make the audience feel the way I just felt reading this play, that was the priority for me. If they can just have a great time.
Yeah, it is one of the funniest musical.
It truly is.
Yeah, it's one of the all-time great, and it's stylistically like the old shows in the 50s
oh,
and 60s.
Huge.
Yeah,
it's huge. It's got so many qualities that remind me of like Crazy for You and My One and Only and Singing in the Rain to a certain extent because of some of the bigger production numbers.
Right.
I mean, you know, Gotta Dance, which is from Singing in the Rain. You know, we have Gotta Sing Sing from the producers. I mean, it's got so many elements that...
Well, we try and count references, and that's one of my challenges to the audience is who is Mel Brooks poking fun at? And
right.
How many different shows? Did anyone ever do a count?
I don't know, because we've added our own on top of it.
Oh,
like in the
okay.
opening number, they're doing a section of the opening number from a chorus line, and there's something from West Side Story. And
oh, it's
sort
great.
Of, the take on the opening is to sort of give everybody, because it's the big Broadway opening,
right.
It's as many different images from all the other Broadway openings. Like there's a Fiddler on the Roof moment and, you know, things that really savvy theater people will look and go, oh, wait a minute, I know that. And then regular audiences, members that don't know it, will hopefully just think it's fun choreography because it's fun for us anyway. So we'll see.
Well, I'm sure it will be. With a great script, with your energy and talent, and with a great cast, it's one of those can't-miss shows.
Well, you're sweet.
Yeah. No, I'm sure it'll be going. But there's another side of Mark Robin that I want to talk Uh-oh. About, too. That's Mark the composer, lyricist, playwright. You've been involved in some children's musicals. Tell us about
yes.
that.
Well, at Joyland and Evergreen Park, when we were doing the children's theater, when I first got there, we were doing these scripts that were just dreadful. And I remember saying to Johnny one day, hey, we could do this better. We could write it ourselves. And he said, all right, we'll write it. And so we did. The first thing we did was Jack and the Beanstalk. And I'd always sort of been a closet composer because I'd never taken piano and I still don't know how to read music. I can write it, but I can't read it. And,
is that right? That's interesting.
And so I sort of slipped a couple of songs in.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next show I wrote a few more. And then the next show I wrote a few more. And then the next thing you know, we're writing these full-length children's shows, which I know you've seen some of.
Yeah,
and,
Peter Pan, Wizard of Oz.
And a lot of them have been done here at the Marriott and Chicago Shakespeare. But the real, for me, the real exciting news, or for Kurt and I, the exciting news years that we're sort of gearing our whole year toward is we had done a production of Treasure Island years ago there that everybody across the boards, even Chris Jones from the Tribune, came and saw it and said, you need to turn this into a main stage production. And so we've taken our time, really taken our time, and not instead of like trying to fast track anything, throughout the years we've been sort of turning this project into a main stage, and we've done a couple of readings, and we had a production of it a few years ago at a theater downstate in Illinois at East Light Theater that did it, and it was hugely successful. And so we did some more rewrites in another workshop, and now the Fulton Opera in Lancaster, Pennsylvania is going to do the world premiere of it March 6th. March 6th.
Well, make sure you send me an email. We'll get a contingent, because I've been wanting to come out there. I definitely want to see that. So,
We're excited. We're really excited, and it's sort of now the... You know, it's one thing to do a children's theater because it's not children's theater, though, gets attention, especially when you do it down, you know, here at the Marriott or at Chicago Shakespeare. But this will be the first time that we're really sort of putting ourselves on the board, says, okay, here's a main stage show. Now come judge us.
Could Broadway be far away from that show?
You know, I take every show for what it is, that particular show, at that particular theater. And if something happens, you know, from, as my mother would say, from my mouth to God's ears. But we're working on this show, and Kurt and I have worked extensively. We're actually taking, don't fall off your chair, but okay, I'm actually taking 8 weeks off.
You are taking off?
Yeah, 8 weeks off.
I thought you just run from one show.
Crazy. No, I'm going to take December and January completely off so that Kurt and I can do the final workshop of it and be ready for the premiere in March.
Well, thanks for the scoop on that, Peter. Yeah, and we'll get a Chicago contingent. This is a great story.
Bring it on. Yeah, it's
great. And it's a lot of people... We need to see you get to Broadway to get a show, because you're a Tony Award waiting to happen.
You're sweet.
And it's just a matter of a vehicle. And what better than I assume you're going to direct?
I am.
Okay. And choreograph?
I am.
And be one of the writers. Hey.
I am.
That's not putting your neck out on the line too much.
You know,
is it?
I figure if you're going to fail big.
Well, you know, so. It's not going to fail.
No. And Kurt and I have had a great time working on it, and we're great collaborators. And
yeah, Kurt is a very talented. How's he doing?
He's fantastic.
Yeah,
he's
that's just Kurt fantastic. Dale Clark we're talking about.
Yeah, he's actually doing a Corny Collins and a regional production of Hairspray right now.
Oh, great.
So and he's terrific. And I think. Yeah, you know what? I think we're putting it all out there. That's all you can do. And we're going to see how it goes. And if it gets picked up, great. And if it doesn't, we can at least say after all these years, we have done it. The Fulton is an incredible theater. They put on fantastic shows.
That's what people have told me. I've never been there. And it's beautiful. God's country up
beautiful,
there.
Yeah. Beautiful. It's part of the reason why we moved to Pennsylvania. It's just beautiful. But anyway.
Well, that's great. And I can't wait till the opening of the producers.
Me too.
And it will be fun. And Mark, thank you very much.
Thank
this has
you
been
for
great.
Doing it.
And folks, go see a play this week.
Hello, Chicago. Welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago News podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Moat, bringing you Chicago's theater news for the week of September 10th, 2007. The Jeff Awards have announced their nominations. That's right, the Joseph Jefferson Awards Committee have announced 119 nominations in 30 categories for Chicago Equity Productions. The shows which qualify for a Jeff Award opened between August 1st of last year and July 31st of this. The Jeff Committee went to 123 opening nights for Equity Productions, offered by 49 producing organizations. 93 of those productions became Jeff recommended. Leading the plays categories with 8 nominations is Steppenwolf Theatre Company's August, Osage County. That, of course, was written by company member Tracy Letts, and of course is being heralded as a major transition in modern American drama. You will certainly be hearing more about the show as it transfers to Broadway in late October. Looking Glass Theatre Company had 2 works being recognized. Mary Zimmerman's Argonautica received 7 nominations, and Black Diamond came in with 4. Porchlight Music Theater's Ragtime received 7 nominations. The show was very well received here in Chicago, which caused it to be transferred over to the Apollo Theater for a very successful extended run. Some noteworthy Jeff nominations were the father and son nods for Tracy Letts and his father, Dennis. Tracy is being nominated for new work and his father for cameo performance. Mary Ernster has been nominated for the role of Anna in The King and I at the Drury Lane Oakbrook. This is certainly noteworthy since she won a Jeff Award for that same role at the Marriott Theatre back in 2001. In the solo performance category, Matt Sachs was nominated for his hip-hop musical Clay by About Face Theatre and Looking Glass Theatre Company, and Lance Stewart Baker was selected for Theatre Wit's Tom Payne based on Nothing. For a complete list of the 2007 Jeff Equity nominations and nominee statistics, including where you can find out who was nominated multiple times, you can click on over to Talk Theatre in Chicago's news section. The 39th Annual Jeff Award Ceremony will be held on Monday, October 29th at the North Shore Theater for the Performing Arts in Skokie. A pre-show appetizer and martini bar starts at 6 o'clock, with the award ceremony beginning at 7:30. Theater in Chicago is pleased to announce that we have partnered with The Stage Channel, the premier source for video play previews here in Chicago. Our new alliance will be giving you, the audience member, a stronger resource to use when you're trying to decide what play you want to see. So when you come to our site, you will not only see what shows are currently playing, read reviews and articles about the show, listen to podcast interviews here on the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast. You can also get pre-theater dining and parking suggestions, but now you can also see video clips of some of the most popular shows now playing on Chicago stages. These clips are filmed by Stage Channel, which has produced hundreds of promotional videos for theaters of all sizes, from some of your favorite storefront theaters all the way up to Steppenwolf. Be sure to check out the video clips of Wicked and Second City's Between Barack and a Hard Place. They are some of my favorites. Not only are these clips of scenes of the shows, but there are also interviews with the director and artist. We are incredibly thrilled to have Stage Channel on board, and we hope you are as well. Get ready, Chicago. Starting today, you now have a chance to get over 10,000 additional tickets for Jersey Boys, which will be coming soon. These tickets are being released after the producers have made some changes in the seating, and you will, of course, get to reap the opportunity to see Jersey Boys playing at the LaSalle Bank Theater. Remember, those additional tickets are going on sale today, so get out and get them now. Thank you for listening to this equitable episode of the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. We have come to the end of the news, but before we let you go, it's time for your Shakespeare Quote of the Week. The following quote comes from Henry IV, Part 1, Act 5, Scene 4. Two stars keep not their motion in one sphere. Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for listening. Remember, we are here every Monday with more news ready to stick in your ears. So, until next time, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you, Chicago, that theater's happening. Don't miss it. Thank you, Chicago, for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast. I would like to thank Mark Robin for giving us the honor of interviewing him this week. I would also like to thank Tom Williams and Mark Meyer. Without them, this podcast would not be possible. And, of course, I would like to thank you, our listening audience. Remember, we are here every Monday with a new episode, ready for your listening pleasure. So, until next time, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you, Chicago, to keep talking theater.